Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Chamber Channel's Five Questions podcast. This is the place where we take a deep dive with industry leaders for an inside look at their world and how they can make a difference in yours.
Leslie Rowland is a baker. She's a chef, an entrepreneur, and this year she was chosen as a prestigious South Carolina Chef Ambassador. Leslie owns not just the Cottage Restaurant, but three other businesses in Bluffton, too. And she's in our studio today to talk about her culinary journey. Let's listen. Leslie, let's start from the beginning. What inspired you to become a chef?
I did not necessarily aspire to be a chef as much as I aspired to and was drawn to the restaurant industry. Which at a very young age I had started working in and just really enjoyed all aspects of it.
Yeah, you know, I grew up in the restaurant business. Sort of my grandmother always had restaurants, and I know she had multiple restaurants. I know what incredible hard work that is. What made you decide to open the Cottage? And you have expanded since then. Talk a little bit about how you've expanded. What made you decide to start with the Cottage?
The Cottage started off, the original concept for the Cottage was actually to be a bake shop. I had been in a transition from Jazz Corner and decided that I didn't want to go back and work for someone else, that I wanted to try something on my own. So I originally, because I had started the Bluffton Muffin Company, and I was one of the first vendors at the Bluffton Farmers Market, I was going to take that concept and expand it because bake shops were coming into like popularity at that time. And someone at the farmers market had said, hey, go over there and look at that old house over there on Calhoun Street and talk to the guy who's in there. And I said, okay, so I did. And as soon as I walked into the Cottage and looked at the porch, I said, oh, this isn't a bake shop. This has got to be a restaurant and a tea house. Like I instantly knew it right when I was in the presence of the house.
It's such a charming house, too.
It has a life of its own.
It definitely does. But you've expanded. I mean, let's talk about Juice Hive, May River Coffee Roasters, the pasta shop. How have these come along?
So these came about, just over time. Every one of those businesses I have had a previous interest in on some level, normally just within my life. Like I'm very much an advocate for health and drinking smoothies and juices. I did a lot of that and a lot of research when I was in New York City. And I always knew back when I was doing it with the results I was getting that this is really kind of before juice bars were a thing. This really needs to be something viable for Bluffton. But it was never the right time. So I actually sat on that idea for about 4 years. And then I pulled the trigger and really happy I did.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about that. Because I think people do. Obviously, you're right. That's a craze that's happening right now with smoothies. And there's some good smoothies and some not so good smoothies. Yeah. Tell me about the difference you saw. You said you actually saw a difference.
I think the difference is, like, I was in New York City and they were just starting up, but it was mostly the cold pressed juice that you would find in health stores, you know, kind of like in Savannah. And the difference really is, like, a cold pressed juice is like straight nutrition. 100% infusion of vitamins and goodness. Smoothie incorporates the fiber from the fruit and the vegetables. And I was intrigued by that. I was always a cold juice person, but the smoothie thing is a meal replacement. Like we sell a ton of those at the Juice Hive. Yeah. And it's a very easy way to get your health on without investing a lot of money in machinery and time. You can still eat healthy, but you can still do that. And I just think people that are into health and working out and want to change their diet a little bit, it's a really good transition into that lifestyle.
Now, how surprised were you to get that call from Justin Bieber's people that you were going to do some juice and smoothies for them? I remember that. That was great. That was a phenomenon.
Yeah, that was a phenomenon. It still kind of is because we still do that juice. We actually named it the Bieber juice. So I was at the Cottage that day and my manager at the time called me and she's like, we just got a call from Palmetto Bluff. Justin Bieber wants us to do his juice for his wedding. And I was like, oh my God, who's Justin Bieber? I was like, oh no, I mean, I knew who he was. And I said, come on, really? I'm really busy right now. Because I thought she was joking.
Stop kidding.
And she's like, no, really? She goes, the wedding is like in 3 weeks. And we knew the manager at the time over there because he was ordering a lot of stuff from us. And she said, no, really, we have to do this. She said, what do you want to do? I said, well, what do they want? I said, this is a wide open question. And so they had ordered our regular juices, our green, our orange, and our red bee that we sell. And they said, but they want a fourth and they want something really unique. And I said, well, let's do something that's like a South Carolina thing. So I came up with the Bieber juice recipe, which is watermelon, mint, and lime.
Ooh, that sounds
and it is really phenomenal. Really good. And we still put it out during the summer, spring and summer.
I can believe that. That would be good. And then you've also got May River coffee roasters. Are you a coffee drinker?
I am a massive coffee drinker. And so the coffee roasting thing came about 5 years into the cottage. I was really tired of buying coffee beans for us to serve there that were very expensive. And it wasn't what I was wanting. I had an envision in my mind of something different. But the current producer at the time wasn't able to sort of fulfill that a wish for me. So I said, you know, I've always wanted to learn how to roast coffee. And I perceived it to be very similar to a culinary kind of thing. And it is on a very rustic level, but not like scientifically. So I found a coffee school in Vermont and I went up there for 5 days and
coffee
I
school.
Loved it.
There's a coffee school.
There is. Ew. Well, there's different ones, right? This was a roasting program. Then there's like the Q-cup stuff, which I wanted to do, but I've since relieved myself of that because it's so hard. And it was awesome. Coffee roasting school was great. And then I jumped out and I bought a coffee roaster. And that's really where your learning comes in. When you're physically actually roasting coffee, you're going to learn by doing.
Learn by doing. That kind of works for a lot of things in life, doesn't
mm-hmm.
it?
Absolutely.
You know, the South Carolina Chef Ambassador Program is a really big deal. Only three get chosen each year. We were so thrilled to nominate you for that honor. And just absolutely thrilled when you won that honor. What was it like? What was your reaction when you got the call that you were going to be one of them?
Oh, it was very, I've used this word a lot. It was very overwhelming because I don't think I understood just the fact that it's chef ambassador, because I'm not a trained chef. I'm completely self-taught. That was probably the most overwhelming part. Like, oh my God, do I have to wear the white hat? One of those things. It was relieved. And that's when I met with Ansley when she came by the cottage and she explained everything to me. And it was really such an honor, one, just to be nominated. And then two, to have received it, just to actually be a part of this South Carolina venture that really, I feel proud to represent Bluffton. Hilton Head, moving in that direction with this program to bring what we do here, you know, because we're just kind of little guys in a big state, sometimes is how you feel, to bring it and get out there with those people that are on the forefront of this culinary adventure that South Carolina has been involved with for the last 10 years of the ambassador program.
Yeah, in that 10 years, you're only the third one who's ever come from the Bluffton Hilton Head area. There've only ever been two other chefs. So it is quite the honor. What do you think you're looking forward to most about it?
I think I'm looking forward most to being around people in the larger cities and people that are kind of on the cutting edge forefront of what's happening in South Carolina. You know, it's really easy to get bogged down and busy with our own lives and what we're doing here in Bluffton and Hilton Head. So it's really nice and refreshing to get out and see some of the new stuff they're doing and be around some of that talent that is on that cutting edge and trying to do new things and assist in that in any way possible if they need help. And just be a part of some of these huge festivals and these really spectacular events that are being put on in the state of South Carolina.
Yeah, South Carolina loves its food. That's for sure. What do you think makes it so special? You know, you mentioned you're from New York. I'm from the South. I sort of grew up with it. So I have I'm used to it. Mm-hmm. But South Carolina really does some interesting things. What is it that you think is so special about it, especially here in the Lowcountry?
Well, I think I've always been fascinated and fancy myself a wannabe culinary historian. Mm. Like right now I'm reading Mr. Twitty's book. And I think I've lived in a lot of different countries because I was raised an army brat. And countries that have extreme culinary history, right? That have been around for thousands and thousands of years, these countries. But something about South Carolina, which I find fascinating, is that the foods that are indigenous to us here may have originated in very far away continents. And this is not information that's necessarily out there, but that is spectacular to me. that how it's evolved to me now cooking shrimp and grits, that chances are really good that came from another continent. And that history, tracing that history and that lineage of who was making this, when and where. And, you know, the coolest thing I love is that a lot of these recipes that I find fascinating, we're like backyard cooking, right? What's in my backyard? Like, there's a river back there. I could probably get some shrimp. I've got a grain growing over here, probably a hominy. And I'm going to create something with this. And that is like superb to me. Because that's how our ancestors did it, right? And we forget that, the simplicity of that. And there is something very simplistic in South Carolina cooking. And it's like that old phrase, less is more. Mm-hmm. That's true. That is really true.
Yeah, food tells the story of a place.
It does. It tells a lot of stories of different parts of a place. And that's what I love. I love that research of that. Like, every time something comes to me that I want to do, I spend hours researching it and reading different cookbooks or finding a recipe in an old cookbook. And I love looking at all these recipes side by side and saying, look at this evolution. Like, this was an 1876 recipe, jumped to 1940. What did they do to change it? And it's something just really simple. Like, they added garlic because it probably started to sprout in their backyard.
Yeah.
It's just mind boggling that the things we're famous for here started off centuries ago in someone's kitchen with a very simple garden in the back.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the cottage. I'm a big fan of real food, just real food. And I know as a country, we've sort of moved out of that realm. But I do think that the pendulum is swinging a little bit the other direction. Do you find that with customers and people requesting or the questions they're asking about what you're preparing?
We do find that. And we do have, it's interesting, recently, and I'd say in the latter part of 2023, even into the beginning of this year, 2024, we have had customers come in that have said, I was here 6 years ago and you had on your menu this, and they'll tell me what it tasted like, and I'll know exactly what they were talking about. And the reason it was removed from the menu could have just been a transition in that phase of our menu. And they speak with it. They speak to that menu item with such clarity and vivid sensory memory of this dish, I feel compelled to go in and cook it for them, you know, at that time, because you could tell there's an attachment to that. And, you know, maybe because I'm not trained professionally, but maybe because of how I was raised in different countries with extreme female and male figures that were all great cooks in and of their own right, there is something very simplistic in the way I approach recipes. And I think there's something that the palate remembers about that, because it's not doctored, it's not elaborated on and elevated to the point where you're kind of saying, what am I tasting here? I kind of like it where you taste what you're eating.
Yeah. The Culinary Institute of the South, I work with them on their Foodseum project that's still underway. And one of the things they did, which I loved, it was talked about at the table, was they're having sort of a booth, a place where you can go in and record. It wants to capture and record for posterity. Tell us about your most memorable meal. And
oh,
if you think,
Lord.
I mean, I bet you can, I can. Oh. If you said, tell me about your top three most memorable meals,
I totally can.
Absolutely.
That's like Corey Store on NPR. You mm-hmm. know, when they do that, tell me about your most, whether you have grandpa that's passed and granddaughter, let's say, and then they share that emotional memory, right? I think that there's something very real to our senses, especially foods that we eat. There are trigger foods for me when I think about my grandmother. Mm-hmm. There are trigger foods that I think about my father. My father, I'd say, was not like the greatest of the cooks, but he did do a few things very, very well. And even when we talk about them, there is a direct sense memory for me in my mouth when hearing a story. If my sister is talking about when my dad was a big Spam guy and he was a big chicken in the bag guy. And when they talk about that, there's an instant salivation that happens in the back, which is connected to the memory And that's a great project. I would love to be a part of that.
Yeah,
that's great.
It's just so interesting how we tie so many memories to connecting with people and connecting with food.
Yep.
What's your go-to comfort food, Leslie? After you've had a long day, what would you say your go-to comfort food is?
I am going to say my go-to comfort is soup.
Soup.
On any level, I do love the process of making soup. My grandmother was a very big soup person, and I do it very much in the style that I witnessed her doing it, which is basically like, what's in the fridge? Let's make a soup. And I love that because it's, again, it goes back to that what's in my garden kind of thing. It's like, what's in my fridge right now? We're going to make a soup. And there's something just satisfying on a soul level about soup, whether it's, I eat it pretty much year round, soup.
You're right. It is something that's so, that again is also tied to comfort. You know, sometimes, especially seasonally, there's nothing you want. A great bowl of soup in the winter or some gazpacho in the summer. There's just something
you know,
to the comfort
I
of that.
Actually jumped over. I had a soup model that I was going to do for my as one of my businesses.
Oh, interesting.
And I jumped over it to do pasta.
Wow.
It was a soup deal.
Well, if you haven't tried it, to our listeners, get out there to the cottage. It's spectacular. I highly recommend the tomato pie. It's my favorite thing on your menu. I'm so glad last time I was there, you had the recipe posted on the blackboard. I'm sure you got tired of answering that question. Or go check out the Juice Hive, May River Coffee Roasters, the Pasta Shop, and who knows what's coming next for Leslie. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. The podcast continues to grow, and never miss an episode of our 5 Questions podcast by subscribing to the Chamber Channel on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take a moment to download, subscribe, and leave us a review. It helps us reach more people.